Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 222, coming at you on a Tuesday evening with Pockets of ADP Part 3, which I should probably edit in the old cha-cha here. We're going to do ADP 200 to 250 as we get closer and closer. We'll have an episode for you Thursday night and Friday, probably afternoon, gets released or so to wrap up your Pockets of ADP. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and the Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Tough day here at Bubba and the Bloom HQ headquarters. We had to just got off the phone with marketing. Just had to nix our formal partnership with the official airline of Bubba and the Bloom, Southwest. So I don't know if anyone saw it this morning, but bags fly free is no longer. Points now expire. Southwest has become just like any other airline at this point. We use them all the time to go to First Pitch. We use them to go to Vegas, but I don't know, man. Our partnerships, our corporate partnerships, we need to personally use these items and support them for them to be official sponsors of the show. So Southwest is out, unfortunately.
Yep, starting May 28th, Southwest is out. So we'll find a new carrier to sit in better seats with actual locked-in seats. And by the time you pay for baggage, probably be cheaper than what's... Oh, and actually get, you know, like a normal drinks and food and stuff and, you know, not be herded like cats. So, yeah, Southwest, the entire appeal.
Rough news this morning.
I sent that to a couple other people and literally got the WTF exclamation marks. Pretty much all my golf buddies were not happy about this one because it's pretty much the only reason to use it is for golf trips to take your clubs for free. That's what it comes down to.
I do need to book my first pitch flight by May 28th to get those bags. So yeah, we're down to, I think we're just down to three more sponsors that we use. This came up the other night, right? Celsius for our energy drinks, yes. High Noon for our booze, and for all food is Bubba's Burgers. That's where we're at. We had to dip out on Southwest, but we still got the other three holding strong.
Well, at least we got the main food groups covered. So we got that one knocked out. Nothing to worry about there. As long as we don't go to the Frontier or Spirit Airlines, we're just fine. I'm going to Alaska, most likely, is my next target. That's a whole other show for another day. A bit of Vegas news, though. As we mentioned on yesterday's show, we had two more people sign up for the live $250 12-team standalone draft that we'll sit around in a circle with our laptops and have a good time, either in a room, a sports book, who knows. We'll figure it out. But we have 9 or 12 signed up, so if you're interested, please let us know.
Yep. Sunday, March 23rd, 11:30 local. If you are there, one guy coming is just, he just lives in Las Vegas and I'll show up. So it's open to anybody who listens to the show and is in Vegas, 11:30 local time. And we'll figure out exact times and location and all that, but just get in and it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Yep. It'll be a great time. Do some drafting. Get it in before we head to the airport, do some fab, and fly home.
Dude, that Sunday is going to be, Jesus. Who knows what time we'll go to sleep Saturday night, and then we'll wake up and do a draft, and then we'll do airport fab. I'm looking forward to airport fab. Me and you just sitting next to each other. Maybe film, may or may not be filmed.
Yeah, housing IPAs, likely drunk, some chicken wings.
Forgetting we drafted all these damn teams we've been drafting and try and do fab that way. So it'll be a scene.
Speaking of that, I have 3 fab teams so far. And I actually looked at all of them earlier today and I'm like, I got a couple spots to fill. Yep, we got some work to be done. So that's Sunday night in Viva Las Vegas.
You're doing good though with only 3 so far. I know that number is going to change. But
yeah, because I got at least 3 more. I got 3 more signed up for already, so I have at least six. TGFBI, I guess, will make 7. So that's still better than usual, honestly. Still better than usual.
Yeah. Looks like I'm at 3. Actually, I'm at 3 right now, but then the Vegas one, and then, or no, Labor and Tout. So that's 6 total. I'll be at 6 this year.
Tout gives me workable. 8. I'll get you in one more. Don't you worry.
You gotta count Tout. What are we doing?
I just did. I said I forgot Tout, so that gives me 8. Okay, yeah.
You are not signing me up for an extra.
We'll get you in one more Sunday night when we're in the airport. I'll get you logged in. Don't you worry.
Jesus, draft like on a plane.
Ryan will have his laptop open and go, I gotta go to the bathroom and watch my stuff.
Southwest will shut off their internet halfway through the flight.
Oh, it'll be great. It'll be great. But yeah, three spots left. Anybody's interested, let us know. You can message us on any social media platform. Or Ryan, what is our email address again?
BubbaBloomPod@gmail.com.
Thank you very much for that. All right. Part three, pockets, ADP, Mr. Bloomfield picks 200 to 250, March OCs. What are we looking at here?
We forge on at part three here. So 200 to 250, to me, it looks, and I just pulled up the board for folks watching on YouTube. I tweeted the boards out on Twitter earlier this evening if you want to access those, but same formula that we've been looking at. I did repull, so that there are some repeats. You will see a Taj Bradley at the top. He slipped one spot, but this is all March 12 team drafts in the NFBC. The 28, I think, at this point they are. There are a lot of drafts. A couple takeaways from generally that I had 200 to 250. In general, even though like the quantity of pitchers is a little bit less than the previous two pockets, I in general do not like the hitters going in this range. I mean, there's a few names that we'll talk about that I do like, but in general, I am not interested in a good number of these 200 to 250 hitters. This is where we see, and we've mentioned this on previous shows, we see the catcher cliff, we see the shortstop cliff. There is not much power anymore. Jorge Soler is the only hitter projected for over 25 home runs on this entire thing. The other two guys that are close are Byron Buxton and Brandon Lau, who I'm not really drafting either. There's a little bit of speed, but yeah, in general, I'm going pitching over hitting in this pocket of the draft. And again, that's part of the reason why we're doing this exercise is for us to kind of go through, and you know, your mileage may vary, but at which points do you like certain positions in the draft, even if it's just a hitter pitcher split? I know I'm going to go heavier pitching with these 3 to 4 picks, depending on the league size that I'm in. So I need to account for that both before and after this pocket, just because there's a good number of pitchers I like. And on the hitter side, it's not so much for me, at least.
Yeah. When we were filling out the outline for our targets and fades and all that stuff, this is definitely the first set of pockets where I'm like, it was tougher to fill out the targets. Let's put it that way. Than usual. I have shares of a lot of pieces here based on the way drafts shook out, but nothing I'm looking to run to, like you mentioned. Definitely more pitchers that I'm targeting. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But hitter wise, it's more just like filling out. Do I need one of the last power bats? There are a handful of steal guys, which is nice. A lot of 15 plus, 20 plus stolen base guys. And even though there's not the elite power, there's still a bunch of 15 plus power guys, as you expect as you go down the board here. So you can still get some like 15, 10, 15, 15 profiles. You can get a 2020 profile with a dreadful batting average in Zach Geloff. But things get bleak. Things start to get bleak as you get down the board, as expected. Next show should be even more interesting in this regard. One thing on the pitching side, Ryan, which I'll mention, is there's 5 potential save targets here.
Yeah.
Given I'm only pretty much drafting one of these 5 as a target for, say, maybe Puck enters the chat too, but for the hitting side, it's more of team needs, upside plays. We'll talk one of my favorite targets later on the hitting side that we've mentioned before, but definitely starting to go for more upside plays hitting, and still some pitchers I like quite a bit.
Yeah, the closer thing is a good call out. It's Kyle Finnegan. I don't think we listed these guys in our rundown, so I'll list them now, but it's Kyle Finnegan at 202, Carlos Estevez 203, who we might have to have a little chat about.
Yeah.
Kirby Yates 234, AJ Puck 234, ADP, and then Liam Hendricks down at 242. I'm with you, though. I think in general, Finney's the guy that I'm taking. I might grab Estevez if I'm desperate, but kind of what I just said on the heels of the last show where I had a bunch of closer fades. Again, this is why I'm taking closer pretty early and trying to get that wrapped up, because it's bad this year, in my opinion. But Finnegan, I think, at least is, well, I know has the job, has some leash. He may not be that good, but doesn't really matter at this point if you're trying to spec for saves.
And he's going to still keep going up ADP. If we wait another day, he probably's not even on this board. So That's another one that's going to keep moving. Well, before we get into it, what do you have to say about Carlos Estevez? Let's just do it. What do you got?
Well, someone in the Discord asked, I forget what the exact question was. I think it was keeper-related question. And it was Justin Martinez and Lucas Ercig. And I were like two of the options or whatever at who should I keep kind of a deal. I picked Martinez in my response along with a couple others, other players. And then you picked Ercig.
Mm-hmm.
So is that more you're high on Ercig and worried about Carlos Estevez? And I know Estevez has been hurt a little bit this spring. Is that like, is Estevez off your board or are you just more an Ercig guy?
Well, there's a key part to his question that does Ercig for me. It saves and holds. And like I said, with Ercig,
it is?
Yeah, that's where, because in that case, Ercig's pitching the eighth inning or later pretty much every game. Where Justin Martinez, if he struggles, he may not even be in the bullpen anymore. He might be in AAA. So that's where I kind of change things up on that one. It'd be on yesterday's questions for the show. So that's where I was going Ercig over Justin Martinez.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. It is saves plus holds, isn't it? BP ass. Yep. Yep. Pulling up the tape. Discord search function came through. I like
Martinez's skills. Martinez's skills are great, but he has more of a chance to not even be in the bullpen than Ercig does.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
and I don't really like keeping closers if I don't have to anyways, like, but he gets to keep 12 guys. That was part of our discussion at the end of yesterday's show. And he cleared it up in the Discord today. So that led Ryan to pick the wrong closer.
That led me to not read the entire original reply. And good God. I'm getting old, man.
It's all good. Speaking of getting old, we got Roger Bloomfield in the chat here. he says, what do you think? Is Costas another Bobby Dalbec or Big Poppy, a late bloomer?
Costas not in the 200 to 250 ADP range, just to clarify for the folks at home. I'll lean. God, that's too
he's closer to Poppy extremes. Than Dalbec.
Yeah,
he's
I'm closer gonna say to closer Poppy. To Dalbec than Poppy. Hmm. Poppy's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, though, either. Well, anyway. If Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame, there's zero chance Poppy should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I he's a Hall of Fame caliber player, I should say.
Okay, that's fair.
I think Costas has a better chance of being a Dalbec than a Hall of Fame caliber player.
Man, if Costas turns into a Dalbec, there's going to be a large portion of fantasy baseball Twitter that's going to have to delete some tweets. That's all I know. It's going to be rough. But. Yeah. We'll see. All right. Any other takeaways from the pocket 200 to 250 here? Again, it's things are starting to get ugly quick at this point in the draft. And I guess I'll beat you to it this show. This is the upteenth reason why you better have your catchers before this section of the draft. It is absolutely like Kyber Ruiz, if you absolutely have to, but then it's Connor Wong, Ivan Herrera, who I like, but there's a lot of questions there. And Ryan Jeffers, like, you better have that stuff cleared up. That's for sure.
Yeah, I've ended up with Jeffers in a few drafts, but just it's more of a desperation. Like, shit, I missed out on Kiber Ruiz, and I just need somebody who at least is the primary catcher. I don't know how long Ryan Jeffers stays healthy for or if he falls apart again like he did last year. But, yeah, it's like Kiber Ruiz or bust at this point. And typically, if your draft plan revolves around one player or bust, we all know you will
where
bust.
That's headed.
Yeah, we all know where that's headed.
I guess I'll also highlight our shortstop discussion we had last show, because you got on this pocket, you got Sedan Rafaela and you have Carlos Correa. That's it. Done. Yeah. So finish that before you get to this pocket of ADP as well. It's a great pocket. Back to the original point Ryan made, just probably focus on pitchers, maybe an outfielder or something, but focus on pitchers is where things go in this range. But I do like some hitters, and we'll talk about those as we get going here, Ryan. So let's get to our ADP debates, and you have our first one here, and it's kind of interesting because we just discussed one of these players off air for a little while. So who do you like in this one?
Yeah, you gave me some support. I just drafted Nico Hoerner in the 15th round of my 12 team draft and hold. So we were just talking about Nico Hoerner. It's just interesting that he's going right next to Mikel Garcia at second base. Obviously, Mikel Garcia is second and third base. That's why he's the off-brand mascot. But the purpose of these ADP battles, again, is just to highlight similar type guys. I haven't really ended up with many of either of these two guys. Similar type guys, similar projections going at the same position. and point in the draft. And both Garcia and Nico Hoerner projected for good batting average. Like Garcia's 262, Nico Hoerner a little bit higher. So you get batting average with Nico Hoerner projected 273. Probably a little bit more power with Mikel Garcia than Nico Hoerner, which still isn't saying much. And the big reason why these guys are grouped together for me is just steals, both projected for 26 stolen bases. So I think I would rather go at this point. I would rather go Nico Hoerner because I should look this up before I say this. I don't know. Like every report so far on Nico has been positive. Like he's not making the Japan trip. And this is what we talked about earlier. But we kind of knew that most of the projection systems, like the bat that I'm using, that ATC, they have Nico Hoerner for 527 plate appearances. I think if Nico Hoerner, and that's probably baking in some missed time at the beginning of the year. I think if Nico Hoerner is healthy starting the year, I think you have to assume 600 plate appearances for the guy. And then that moves his counting stats up quite a bit and helps with the batting average. So I'd go Nico Hoerner over Mikel Garcia, forego that second third base eligibility. I don't know where you stand on that, but I thought it was interesting those guys are similar going at the same point.
Yeah, if we were drafting like a month or two ago, it was easily Mikel Garcia for me, but with the news that we talked about before the show that he's gonna start playing minor league games this week while they're in Japan, they still expect him to be ready at opening day or very close to opening day, everything you mentioned, that gets me interested in Nico for a couple of reasons. Last year we had to draft Nico so early, I hated it because you're drafting an average. Steals and maybe runs. We talked about that a ton. Where you're drafting him now, we've already discussed how statistics are out the window for like half these guys. So if I can go and draft a guy that's going to hit for a good average, maybe he throws in 75 plus runs, maybe more, you never know. But he steals, like on a good year, Nico steals over 30. Like that's a thing he does. That's pretty valuable down here. That would easily be the most in this range, projection-wise, not even close. Yep. So I think there's a massive upside here at this point. Like I said earlier, a lot of these guys that I'm drafting hitters here, it's more of an upside play in this range. And Nico Hoerner would be one of those. Like I still like Mikel Garcia a lot. I'm not downplaying that. I love that second base, third base, MICI thing. Because where I'm drafting him here, he's probably is my MICI. He's not going to be my starting second or third. So that's pretty big as well. We talked about it last year, and I don't think much has changed. I think the power is pretty good with Garcia and hasn't fully tapped into it yet. I think he's more of a 15 home run guy than we've seen. Like he's got the quality of contact metrics that support it. He just hasn't totally hit into it yet. We'll see if he ever does. But so he's got that. The average will be lower. Steals can be pretty good. So it's kind of like you said, do you want power or do you want average? I think at this point in the draft, if you can find average, take it because you're going to start depleting it even more later on. Yes. That's the other reason I like Nico Hoerner, because you're not going to find that kind of average later on by a long shot.
Yeah, although there's some interesting – that's actually one takeaway I didn't really notice looking at the board here. There is some green for batting average a little bit further down. Like Byung-Hoo Lee we'll talk about, Jake McCarthy we'll talk about, CES, who knows what the batting average is going to be for that guy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There are some. It just – yeah, it comes with other big warts at this point in the draft. Yeah.
We'll review this chart to the next two charts, and that'll sum up the batting average we're looking for, I think, when all things are said and done.
Yeah.
All right, so my first debate, it goes with two first basemen that are going, one's at 227 and one's at 233, so relatively close to each other. You have Ryan Mountcastle making the comeback. Missed a lot of time, hurt last year. People are pumped, got the new fence in left field. We've already seen pictures of that as they're working on it there in Baltimore. He's projected for 261, 19, and 3. And then you mentioned CES, ADP 233. He's projected for 258, 17, and 2. So almost a very similar stat line to Ryan Mountcastle. Now the question is, what's CES's playing time going to be? That's a big question, but I'll give you the floor first before I give my speech on this one.
I don't have a firm lean either way. I might go CES at this point. Just because if it doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. And this is where I typically like to take my shots, just the way that I draft. Like, I don't know how much taking. I mean, we all know I love drafting people bound for nursing homes at this point. But, like, I just don't know what Ryan Mountcastle is getting you from a ceiling standpoint. I think if you draft a Ryan Mountcastle, maybe in a 15-teamer, like, you like that volume, that stability. But unless he can fully change his pulled fly ball approach or whatever that he used to have before they move the wall in or whatever,
I don't know how much Mountcastle actually benefits from the shorter left field fence in Baltimore. And it's just a pure speculation play for CES, who at this point last year was a, I mean, what was his name? He was a top 10 round pick.
Yeah, he was
going and by. Now he's not just because he got hurt. I mean, 2024 was a total loss season for CES. So he's getting a major, major injury discount off a freak thing that you can't really plan for. So I'd go CES. I'd take a shot on the ceiling here again. I'll throw it back to you for like the playing time outlook. You're a little bit more well-versed in that than I am, but I would take the shot on the ceiling of CES over boring old Ryan Mountcastle.
Well, to your playing time question, Mountcastle should play regularly at first base, barring injuries and whatnot. Things can obviously change, but that should be the idea behind that. But and CES, it's gotten to the point where he's starting to be really productive and healthy this spring. And they sent Noelvi Marte down to AAA, which means the Candyman can play third base, which opens the door for CES to DH or play first base. That's the way I am looking at things. Obviously, a lot can change. If you look at roster resource, they still have CES on the bench because they have him platooning with Candyman at first base, because that's right. Gavin Lux is going to play third, which I am a fan of as well. But
Cincinnati, I think man. Jesus.
Yeah. But like you have Jake Fraley at DH and you have Henry Candelario at first base. I understand CES, you know, maybe they want to platoon him because he does mash lefties, but what do we really know if he does? We don't know. He hasn't done any of it. I have a hunch, though, he's a lot better than the other two I just mentioned. Let's put it that way. A healthy CES. And I'm pretty sure CES is going to, if he keeps hitting, he's going to force their hand. They're going to have to play him. That's just the way I see it. So it goes to your taking the chance thing. I'm a big fan of CES in this combination. I think we know who Ryan Mountcastle is. I don't think he has a ceiling. Like if it's maybe 20, 23 home runs. CES, maybe he doesn't do it this year, but I would not be shocked if a healthy year in Cincinnati we see 30-plus home runs from that bat. Like the dude's a freak. So I'm in on him. I take him in this battle, and I'll leave it at that because we have more to talk about him later in the show. All right, who is your next ADP debate?
We're talking CES again later in the show. No. Oh, yeah, you put him as a target.
Yeah.
My bad.
Ryan reads the outline, everybody.
Well, no, man, you put him as a target and in the ADP. That's on you, my friend.
That's how bad this section is. I couldn't, like, skip out on this. Like, my next debate's really going to fluster you because it's both of our targets.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, it is, dude. What are you doing? It's the unwritten rule, man. We're double counting players here. It's all good. It's all good. It's been a long week. It's only Tuesday. We were frazzled by the Southwest news. We'll give it that.
It ruined us.
Next one I've got is, I think we had talked about this in Tout Wars, because I took Cedric Mullins in Tout Wars and you took Jake McCarthy in Tout Wars. And I think you took Jake McCarthy at a 4 or 5 round discount, which I don't, according to the ADP, is not a thing, right? In drafts here, it is, where the hell is Mullins? 213 ADP and McCarthy is 231. So going 15, 20 picks later, Mountcastle. But to me, it's kind of like the same guy. It is a similar type guy. It's a probably a platoon bat with some like a low floor, a floor being like they don't play regular. Jake McCarthy was sent to the minors a year or two ago after he had, you know, a pretty good stretch of fantasy production. But they also run, and they run like hell. Mullins has, I think, a bit more power than Jake McCarthy, less batting average. But I just thought you're kind of in this. I think this is something where a lot of drafters are trying to take their fourth, maybe fifth outfielder. Do you take this platoon bat? Do you go Mullins, McCarthy? Are you fine with either one? I've taken Mullins a little bit more, but you've opened my eye more to McCarthy. Maybe it was just the Tout Wars OBP thing that got me on McCarthy, but I'm fine with either one. And actually both of them are, for me, if I'm trying to fill out outfield, I think both of them are fine picks, especially obviously if you need speed.
Yeah. I do like Mullins a lot. When you look at like roster resource, the platoons with Ramon Laureano, which I get it. That's what they brought him in for, but we were worried about him platooning last year and injuries made him end up playing 147 games and 18 homers and 32 steals. Like the average has been bad the last 2 years, but the power and speed, even when he played 116 games, 15 and 19, So it just comes down to playing time. We know the production will be there with Cedric. I think that's very, very good. And I do have Cedric shares, so I'm not opposed to him at all. But I think the Arizona Diamondbacks thing with Jake McCarthy, like I wasn't the biggest McCarthy guy either before Tout. Then I talked to our boys, ITL, Welsh, Bogman, on the D-backs preview. And I know, you know, all these guys are homers, but it did open my eyes to Jake McCarthy because injuries have derailed him. It wasn't as much of a guaranteed platoon. It was more, he was just hurt a lot. And like he played 142 games last year. That's not a serious platoon. If he's a strong side at worst, 8 homers, 25 steals, hit .285. He's only 26. It feels like we talked about Jake McCarthy forever. Mm-hmm. So like Cedric has more power. McCarthy, well, they might have similar speed too, is the crazy part. McCarthy should have a better batting average, and that could lead to a ton of runs. And right now doesn't have a platoon situation. That's so it comes down to like the ceiling. I think I give it to Cedric, so that's why I've been drafting Cedric. But if we're talking about 35 picks later, there's nothing wrong with Jake McCarthy. And it kind of Jake McCarthy to me is the Nico Horner of the outfield in this section. Like if you want a guy with average, a little bit of pop and a ton of speed late to like fill some holes and say you're using Ryan's draft tracker and you see like, hey, I need this or that. Jake McCarthy is a great fit for that. I think he's a really good 15 team play. Really good. I know that's a topic of discussion in the Discord that maybe we shouldn't be using 10 versus 15. But the point is, I think McCarthy brings a really, really good floor where Cedric brings a ceiling if he were to get the playing time. If Cedric plays 150-plus games, we got a 2020 guy that we've seen go 30-30 recently.
Yeah,
like, I don't think that player has completely disappeared in a very good lineup. So I'm taking Cedric, but I'm also trying to like give Jake his flowers a little bit, that he's better than I thought he was at the start of draft season. Let's put it that way. And I've at least entered the chat of like thinking about drafting him.
I think I could argue that just given the age difference, 30 and 27, his speed is a skill of the young. You could argue that Jake McCarthy's ceiling is just as high as Mullins. Mullins has already done it, like you said. But at 30, when does that? I'm kind of talking myself into McCarthy while you're talking yourself into Mullins, which is kind of weird. The more I look at it, I might just grab McCarthy later, assuming I have a little bit more power, because the lack of power with McCarthy is legit. Like the dude is allergic to a barrel. 8 home runs and 495 plate appearances. I don't see that getting any better, but everything else with McCarthy looks pretty good. So I think when in doubt, just take who's going cheaper for me. But yeah, both fine picks, I think.
And the last thing I'll say on McCarthy, and again, is a comment that a lot of people don't like, but if you're still doing draft and holds like Ryan is and many others, McCarthy's awesome in that format because you could like pick the weeks to start him. Like, hey, I'm running a little behind in steals. Let's start him for like 2 weeks and just freaking ramp it right back up and then go the next direction. Like those kind of guys are nice to have assets with as well.
McCarthy is a UVA guy. Might have to reconsider
knock him down a few picks.
Analysis there. Yeah. He's okay.
Yeah, he's just okay now. All right. The next debate I mixed up because I didn't follow the rules. So, we're going to go with a different
different
set of pitchers here, Ryan, because
I'm going to cut you off again. There's another rule of don't change the damn outline during mid show. Did you already print out a new thing?
I wrote it down. It's the beautiful thing about a pen and paper. We're good. There's two guys getting drafted right next to each other. One guy that Ryan wrote about recently in a speculator column that he's nervous about, according to the Discord we were in, it's Yu Darvish with an ADP of 224. Walker Buehler with an ADP of 221. Two pitchers we know have been very good in their career. Two pitchers that have been battling injuries of late. One is younger than the other, obviously. But both have projections with, you know, 4.69 ERA, 1.37 whip for Buehler. Darvish 4.28, 1.23. But strikeouts are still good. 145 for Darvish, 118 for Buehler. I'd expect that to be higher. I think that's on the lower side of things, probably due to the innings on the projections.
Yes.
But how do you foresee this Darvish versus Buehler thing, because this is a region we like a lot of pitchers and haven't drafted much of either one of these guys.
Right, neither have I. I'm going to go Darvish, but I'm going to talk about Buehler a little bit more because he came up in the Discord today. The question was someone asked, because I am known to just completely omit players from my rankings. This is how the legend of Garrett Mitchell began, who I still just as a bit at this point, I'm not ranking Garrett Mitchell in my outfield rankings.
It's an adorable bit.
I'll just defer to Bubba with Garrett Mitchell. But I also did not rank Walker Buehler in my top 100 starting pitchers. And someone asked, like, is that one of your mistakes as well? And I don't think it is. I Walker Buehler was legitimately pretty bad last year. And I know, like, we don't expect him to just come back from Tommy John and just be the man instantly. But I think there's a real risk that Walker Buehler just isn't the same as he was pre-surgery. This will be his age 30 season. I'm not super worried about the innings. Well, just a little bit. I mean, he threw 108 innings last year. So I think he could go 140, 150. But it's more just like the lack of skills that we saw from Walker Buehler last year that really concerns me. That being said, I did write an article that is coming out on Wednesday at Baseball HQ, a speculator article called Finding This Year's Jack Flaherty. And I think the parallels between Jack Flaherty this time a year ago with Walker Buehler now are almost exactly the same. Super heralded prospect, a ton of early career success, couple years totally waylaid by injury. Jack Flaherty came back last year, and obviously I was a big Flaherty guy last year and did his thing. Why can't Walker Buehler do the same thing? So I'm kind of talking out both ends here. That the purpose of that speculator column is more of like a 20% play. Like, what if everything goes right for someone like Walker Buehler? I could see a Jack Flaherty type of thing. I just think the most realistic, the most probable outcome, in my opinion, is Walker Buehler looks a little bit more like what we saw from him last year. And I don't know if that's a top 100 starting pitcher.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was looking up Buehler as you were talking. Dude's going to be 31 this year. Didn't think he was that old.
Like, he's not young anymore. Right.
No. He's having a good spring, again, small sample, of course. But I do like what we saw in the postseason. Guys can, like, take that Flaherty jump, as you mentioned. So I see the argument for liking Walker Buehler. I really do. I'm not opposed to Walker Buehler. I've always been a Yu Darvish guy, but I'm also kind of nervous from what we saw last year. He had the personal thing, but he also had some injuries as well to slow things down. When we're talking age with Yu Darvish, this is not great. He is 38. He'll be 39 later this season. Or no, he'll be 38 later this season, sorry. So that's something else to keep in mind. He's almost as old as we are, Ryan. And he only threw 81 innings last year, 136 the year before. So things have been falling apart a bit. Ratios were still good last year, which is nice.
Yeah.
I lean Walker Buehler out of the two. Just because I lean Walker Buehler out of the two. I think there's more strikeout upside with Walker Buehler. I don't know. It's an ugly situation. That's why I really haven't taken either, but they're going right next to each other. And I think Buehler is the play out of the two for sure, because I could see both of them being on the waiver wire within a month to 2 months of the season.
See, I think Darvish is still going to be good. Like, I think the only question with Darvish last year, I mean, the swing strike, especially, it got even better in the second half. It was only 25 innings, but I still got a 13% swing strike. That's as high as since the COVID season, through a ton of strikes. I think Yu Darvish, like, I'd give me 80 innings from Yu Darvish at this point in the draft over 150 from Buehler. I just don't think the Buehler innings are going to be as quality. So I don't know if you're willing, since you just said it was a lean.
This is not
your
words.
I don't know if you're going beer bet on this one.
No. Damn. No, we are not going beer bet on this one. Not even close.
Yeah.
We might go beer bets on two of our targets that I was going to debate. We could do that maybe later on, but yeah, not this one.
That's going to be tough. We'll see. We'll see where the night takes us.
We'll get there. But that leads us in to our targets in this portion of the ADP. And like I said, the first two shows, easy to find targets. Not a problem. This show, especially trying to follow the rules, as Ryan said, not easy on this one. So, Ryan, who is your first target in this range?
And they're not even really rules. They're just kind of...
So it's like throwing in a guy's head. It's the unwritten rules of the podcast.
Yeah. I'm going to go Matt Shaw. I'm going to go Matt Shaw. And I would have gone Matt Shaw even before today's news that he is making the trip to Japan, which obviously is a boon for Matt Shaw. Not to relate everything back to an article I write at Baseball HQ, but I did do a little a common theme here with the speculator searching for this year's Jackson Merrill.
I was about to say it's got Jackson Merrill vibes all over it. I knew exactly.
It does. It's like someone who like later in camp, as camp goes on, like gets a starting job. I think Matt Shaw has the starting gig pretty safely in Chicago. Has some prospect pedigree for sure, but not like a top elite, top five, top 10 Wyatt Langford type of prospect. I just think the parallels are there with Jackson Merrill and Matt Shaw. Matt Shaw is the added benefit of, at least, I mean, we don't know what he's going to do. He could fall completely flat on his face, but has the benefit of speed, 31 steals across two levels. Last season had 152 plate appearances in AAA. Like, that's not a full season, but I think he's ready. The plate skills held up really well as Matt Shaw went from AA to AAA with the power. I think, again, along the lines of what I was talking about with Nico Horner earlier, comparing to Mikel Garcia, this is somewhere where I'm willing to kind of go and take a shot there at third base, which is just not the best spot for really any third baseman in this draft. Josh Young is a third baseman going in this pocket at 200, but like
Arenado,
like, yeah, we know I like my olds, but I'm taking Matt Shaw over Nolan Arenado. I just think where Shaw's going in the draft, at least right now, it could probably go up with the Japan news. It just, and that's like the other Merrill thing, like down to it. They're going overseas.
That's what I'm saying.
I didn't realize that until just now. Yep. So yeah, Matt Shaw's the move.
Yep. Like him a lot. He's a five category dude. You never know how much that taps into on season one of his career, but very good five category assets that could come your way as soon as this year, if he goes full Jackson Merrill. So definitely worth a shot at this point of ADP. I did mention on a little sneak peek for Wednesday's Breakfast with Bubba, expect this ADP to rise, folks, with that recent.
So I was just looking. Matt Shaw in three main event. We now have main event ADP, which is 15 team, like $1,700 league. Big spenders. Matt Shaw is basically a 199. ADP went as early as 190. In one of those three main event drafts. So I would expect that price to go up to where Matt Shaw, you're going to have to spend a top 200 pick on him.
Yep. Makes total sense. All right. Well, I don't have too much more to add on my first target, cause we talked about him earlier again. It's Christian Encarnacion Strand, CES. Once I saw he was healthy this spring, I started buying, and you mentioned earlier the ADP last year compared to this year. I've already taken that dip into consideration. First base has been a position that I don't do it on purpose, but I don't force it either. If you don't get one of the early first basemen, you kind of wait for another pocket. And if I don't get them, then this is the world where I can live. Like, you go here or you go even farther down to Andrew Vaughn's and others I won't mention because it'll probably annoy you by now. But CES gives me tons of upside here. Like I said, it's a guy that I believe has a 30 home run bat in his system. He did that in 2022 in the minors. In 2023, between the minors and the bigs, he had 33 home runs. Obviously had the injuries last year that derailed everything. He already has three home runs this spring and only 25 plate appearances, which is not bad. He's only striking out 20% of the time this spring. Again, quality of competition is always up for debate on who he's facing, but to see him healthy, to see him hitting like that is a big plus in my books. And in 2023, when he played 63 games and hit those 13 home runs with the Reds, he hit .270. So he proved he wasn't a complete batting average drain over, again, small sample. I get it. But if we want to take some chances here at first base where things get murky, I like me some CES.
Yeah, I like him more than Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah. So he doesn't like him that much.
No, he's fine. I mean, there's no other first baseman in this entire pocket. And like you said, once you get later, I'm not doing Andrew Vaughn. Like, this is, I do it too. So.
Yep. And I got him for like $2 in our listener auction, which makes me very excited in that one. Yeah. All right. Who is your next target here? Because this is I figured this was coming.
YOLO, Nick Lodolo. Let's do it. I'm back on the train. I was on the train last year, and Nick Lodolo threw up a 4.76 ERA in 115 innings. So didn't treat me too well with that call, but I'm going back to the well, the skills, and maybe this is like a Nick Pivetta at some point where like the skills are always there and the results are not, especially in Nick Lodolo's home park. But the skills are there. It's just Nick Lodolo needs to stay healthy. He was on the IL three different times last year, but it was all non-arm stuff. It was the leg. It was a groin. It was like a hand or blister or something, or finger, something like that, that contributed to Lodolo just throwing 115 innings. He's never thrown 125 innings in a season as a pro. I get that. Like I'm concerned about what a August, September Nick Lodolo looks like once he, if he even gets that far and is in uncharted territory from a workload standpoint. But dude, like the missed bats, the control looks really good. I think Nick Lodolo, like the curveball's nasty. Forecaster, we gave him a upside of 325 ERA, 180 strikeouts. I believe that can happen. And at a 228 ADP, I have been gobbling up Nick Lodolo pretty much everywhere again, like I did last year, and it didn't work out, but feeling good still.
Yeah, I have nothing negative to say about Nick Lodolo at this price point. It's kind of the theme of this pocket. We talk about upside plays. He's a tremendous upside play. If he's can get you 140 plus innings and stay, you know, doing Nick Lodolo things, I think you'll be just fine there. Comparing him to Nick Pivetta is actually pretty good. That's pretty good the way we've seen things. So and even if he does that at this ADP, it doesn't crush you if he just pitches that many innings, gets the strikeouts. Like, you can survive that.
So. Yeah. I mean, I'm already going to get him screwed up now. Pivetta, as I mentioned on the last show, like, I still think the floor is pretty low with Pivetta. Like, he's actually been pretty good lately. Where the floor with Lodolo, like, I will admit, he's posted some pretty ugly ratios in his time. So you're gambling on the skills winning out over the results. I think they will, though.
All right, so my next one, shocker, everybody. Ryan doesn't know how to rank him, but I do. It's Garrett Mitchell. We've hit that portion of the ADP where...
I wrote this one down for you, by the way.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, Ryan texts and goes, hey, I sent you the board. I already got one of your targets on the outline for you.
Filled out, yeah.
Garrett Mitchell. I don't know, like, if you've listened to the show, really, what? I should pass the mic back
you
to
like,
you.
I'm surprised, yeah. You like point. Garrett Mitchell?
So, yeah, this is a guy that... I believe we're seeing projections have him for like 15, 20 in 115 games. He's going to play every day in center field. They have him hitting in the middle of the order, which I still not sure I completely believe that. But the playing time, I do believe he's healthy so far. They're not going to platoon him because, A, they don't have platoon options right now, and there's no reason to. They were going to start him last year until he broke his hand, never fully got going, hit 8 home runs with 11 steals over 69 games. I think this is a 2020 guy, 2025 type guy over a full season. Batting average, we'll see. Like, hit for really good averages throughout the minors. Hasn't really had it all together. He's hitting 348 in spring, which is awesome. But 255 last year in his sample with the Brew Crew, was hitting over 300 a lot of seasons in the minor leagues. So if he could hit for like that 280 plus, get you at least 15 homers, I think it's 20, and get you all the stolen bases, that would be great. People point to the strikeouts, 32% K rate last year. That's fine. Again, in the minors, he was a low 20s guy. I think it's just adjusting to the big league level. That's why I'm willing to kind of play off some of this stuff. I know others think it's crazy, but I'm willing to adjust a bit to it. He had a 56% ground ball rate here throughout the minors. It was closer to 40 towards the end of his minor league career. A lot of things, I think, between getting hurt and just trying to rush back maybe affected things. Maybe I'm, you know, just picking away because I like him so much. We'll see. But I think there is a ton to like with Garrett Mitchell. He's young. He's going to get his at-bats. And it's a power. Like, he's a Cedric Mullins profile. I'll tell you that. He's a Cedric Mullins profile going a lot later than Cedric Mullins. So there you go. I'll leave it at that.
How do you know he's a Cedric Mullins profile? Like, he's never had 340 plate appearances in a season as a pro. Minors included. We don't know who the hell he is.
Cedric, yeah, we could have said that about Cedric Mullins when he was 25 also.
Well, you could say a lot about people that are, when they're 25. I'm just saying,
like, this is the thing we always differ on, is you don't like projecting young players like I do.
Dude, no, I'm fine. I'm honestly, like, even though Garrett Mitchell, like, we tagged Luis Rengifo as the mascot last year because of how often he was brought up on every single show. I would argue Garrett Mitchell has actually been brought up and talked about more this season. Solely by you,
yeah,
than me. So he's mascot potential, but only for one of us. I don't know, dude. Like, I just the major league strikeout rate scares the hell out of me. Maybe he does adjust, but you're you're making a very big assumption at this point. And really the health. I mean, it was a shoulder subluxation a couple years ago, as a finger, and it's what I just said. He's never, I mean, he's never lasted half a season pretty much as a professional. So I don't know, but I can't, like, I can't bag the guy too much. He's going at a 240 ADP, like, to what I, you know, that my philosophy at this point is, if it works out, great. If not, you just cut and move on. And Garrett Mitchell, I will give you, has the ceiling. At this point in the draft, I'm okay doing it. It's just, I like to give you crap for mentioning Garrett Mitchell every single show.
Like, would you rather Mitchell or Alec Burleson?
Mitchell. I mean, Burleson's on my fade list. TJ Friedel may be a better.
That's where I was going to go next.
TJ Friedel's going next at 246. I would probably take TJ Friedel is no beacon of good health either, but
no, he's not.
I would probably take Friedel over Garrett Mitchell. Similar projections, which is interesting. It's a good comp. I don't know. Yep.
All right. Enough of that for now. The listeners have heard their Garrett Mitchell spiel for the night. Who's your next target?
Let's see. Who is it? Oh, Reese Olson. Reese Olson's he's the last pitcher going on this board. 247 ADP. I also like Ronel Blanco is 246. Thought putting him on there as well. But I'll go Reese Olson, someone who I am ending up with a lot at the price. I really like, he is one of these guys who has two elite secondary pitches. I did a Bloom board on Reese Olson. Forget which two secondaries it is, but they are at, both of them had 20% swing strikes or higher. Reese Olson has the stuff if the fastball is workable. The reason is, I mean, look at the projections, 393 ERA, 126 whip, 130 Ks. I'm guessing the 130 Ks is because of low innings, because Reese Olson can miss some bats and get some Ks. So I just like, I like the overall profile. I'm banking on health at this point, but again, at a 250 ADP, anybody who you pick is either probably has health issues, because if they don't have health issues, that means they're just not very good. And so I'd rather gamble on someone who at least has the skills and you're just hoping can stay healthy. So I've been ending up with a lot of Reese Olson at the price.
It's a great price for Reese, the way he pitched last year before he got hurt, and what he's pitching this spring. And you mentioned the quality pitches. There's a ton of upside in that arm right there. So zero issues with that pick whatsoever. Yep. Another guy that people should know, I target, like, I'm just going to target this. I'm just going to rename this whole show. This is your upside pocket, folks. Jesus Luzardo. I think we've talked about him plenty on the show. ADP is hanging around 218 right now, 216, projected for 410, 126, and 154 strikeouts. It was only a couple years ago where Luzardo was like getting Cy Young comps at one point, 178 innings and 32 starts with the Marlins. 3.58 ERA. We saw just the pure filth from the man with a 20.6% K to walk. The year before that, 21.3% K to walk. So we know how good this guy really can be. Gets traded to the Philadelphia, a better team in general. The ballpark, not so much, but a better team. They wouldn't have traded for him likely if he was still hurt. So we got to take that into consideration. I just love the upside with Luzardo. He was actually pitching okay before, like, his last start or two before he went out for the season. We saw a first few starts look pretty good. So I'm bouncing back in. Gonna be 27 years old. Projections are funny because, like, you have Zips has him in 109, but Steamer's got him 160 innings. It's basically like 150 to 160. I think he's at least 150. I'm in that world as well. If you get 150 from Jesus Luzardo at this ADP, that's a whole lot of strikeouts. And if he just happens to find like 80% of that ace at this ADP, you're way, way in good shape right here. So I love Jesus Luzardo.
And I can argue he gets back to more than that. I don't think there's any reason why a healthy Jesus Luzardo can't snap right back to the 2022-2023 version that he was. Luzardo was also on my next Jack Flaherty list because it's a similar comp, right? Good a couple years ago, injuries, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to fight you on Luzardo. That's one where I am on board with. Especially now that we've at least seen him pitch this spring, that helps at least have a little bit more confidence that Jesus Luzardo is healthy. So I'm going to deny your request for a Bloom board a beer bet between Lodolo and Luzardo, because I like those two guys too. And again, this is why I'm talking about, I like pitchers in this group. I mean, we haven't talked about I didn't even mention Nate Eovaldi, Bloom Board's legend. He's at 214. He's on this list. Clay Holmes, 211 on this list. Like there's out there. I just think there's a lot of pretty good ceiling pitchers that that I'm on board with. And that's kind of why I'm going more pitching at this point in the draft.
Yeah, just like top of my head, I probably in this pocket, I take at least two pitchers, at least two in this pocket when I do drafts, just looking at it. So I get it. I get it, amigo. It makes a lot of sense to me as well.
Do you want to guess real quick, not just to derail, but what's Clay Holmes' main event ADP right now through those three drafts? Right now it's 211 on our board.
171.
Close. 180. 180. Yeah. For...
I figured he got a massive rise recently.
Yep.
He looked good on Tuesday again. Like, boy's throwing. So, yeah. F. So did Grant Holmes, though, by the way. Grant Holmes looked real good today as well.
Yes, he did. I noticed that line. That helped me out. And Grant Holmes has not even shown up. He must be on the next show.
Oh, he's not rising that much. It's crazy. Like he still just hangs around in the next pocket, basically.
Okay. Maybe my Grant over Clay Holmes is like a take at this point.
Could be. It could be. All right. Fades. Who's your first fade?
All right. First fade. Red Sox, Surdain Rafaela. I just think at the price, 203 ADP, you can kind of just look at the projection and it just doesn't get close to where Surdain Rafaela is going in drafts. And that doesn't necessarily like keep me off a guy at this point, but I want to see like a projection can fall short of where they're going in ADP at this point. I just want to see a higher ceiling. And it's kind of weird saying this with Rafaela, who's very young. I just, from what we saw in the skills last year for Rafael, especially the plate skills are straight up awful. I just don't know if there's a next step, maybe later in his career, but I don't know about in 2025. And so like, while the shortstop outfield eligibility is nice, I think Surdain Rafaela could be a batting average drain who is projected for 11 home runs. It's like, what else do you do? So Surdain Rafaela is someone who I am off on.
Yeah, like I don't have any shares on this year. I was much more interested in him last year. The one thing I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that wouldn't shock me if things change is they've yo-yoed him around so much last year in positions that for a young player,
that can't
be easy. Like he's supposed to just stick in center field now, and that might help a ton. So I'll give him that grain of salt because he had a couple of stretches last year where like, wow, okay, this is the hitter we thought he'd be, and then it disappeared again. But I'm with you. I have not went that direction at this point in the draft. Like, especially like Elliot Ramos right there. Like, come on. What are we doing here?
Yeah. What are we doing?
Yeah. Speaking of which, right behind your boy, a couple picks later, is Byron Buxton, who is a full fade for me. And most people, I'm not going to throw any more shade out there, would not be drafting Byron Buxton. We see the projections. Somehow have him for 21 home runs. Or 23 home runs, sorry, which absolutely shocks me because he's only hit 20 plus home runs once in his entire career. So that projection, pretty interesting to me.
Yeah.
They also have played over 100 games. He's only done that twice in his entire career. So projections, like we talk about guys who we can project over what's getting projected. I think they already are projecting over what Byron Buxton does. Let's be real about this. So if you want a guy that's going to play, 90 games at best probably and hit you 15 home runs and probably not hit for a good average because he hadn't done that in 3 years before last year, go ahead and draft Byron Buxton. But we're talking upside in this range. I don't see any upside at all with Byron Buxton.
Right. I think like 5 years ago, you might have said there's upside with Byron Buxton because yes, at some point in time, he was a very big prospect and we all know the Byron Buxton story. He's 31 now, to your point. Yeah, that's a wild stat. Over 21 homers just once in his career. And I think even if somehow a miracle that Byron Buxton stays healthy, I still don't even think he gets 500 plate appearances. The Twins are babying him. Like he's not going to play every day. And how do you in a weekly league roster that and start that when you know he's probably going to sit one out of every three games just to try and keep him healthy, which is kind of what the Twins should do, to be honest. Like if I was the Twins, I'd probably do that too, as opposed to doing what they did with him last year and throw him in center field every day. Like we know that's not going to work, but from a fantasy standpoint, even if Byron Buxton's healthy, I don't know if he's playing more than four games a week. And that's just from a weekly standpoint, it's just tough to roster. So I'm with you. I'm with you. Full fade on Byron Buxton at 206.
All right. Tell me why we're both fading this next guy.
Because he just doesn't do anything. It's Alec Burleson, who I kind of liked for quite a while. Last year.
He was Burleson, remember?
it was barrel season last year with Alec Burleson. And I mean, started out great. 12 homers, hit 278 with five steals in the first half. And kind of went back to Alec Burleson in the second half. And the lefty problem is a major problem, even if Alec Burleson is not in a platoon, which I think he will be. You don't want to touch Alec Burleson against lefties. And I just, even against righties, like even if you're streaming him, I get like, maybe it's a bad time of year to say this because he's always good in spring training, but I get like Gavin Sheets type vibes where like, just, you know, what's he doing? So I don't know. The projection on Burleson of 15 homers, six steals and 266 just doesn't get it done for me because I don't think there's much of a ceiling beyond that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the fact they really don't have a position for him right now, it's a mess. A guy that was an everyday player last year, all of a sudden, like, yeah, I don't know about that, dude. Like, you're going to back up Willie at first and maybe play some DH. So if that's how the Cardinals of all teams are going to see it, it doesn't need to be on my team at all. Jackson Jobe, everyone's darling about 2 months ago. Everyone wanted to draft Jackson Jobe. Not this guy. Not this guy. There has not been a share of Jackson Jobe on my roster. Not one. So, yeah, we're going to continue that trend now as Jackson Jobe continues to his ADP is 238 right now, and he's projected to play in AAA to start the season, which is fine. There's a lot of prospects that do that. You know, Jobe's got those new pitches everyone's all excited about. Okay, we'll see how that goes. But even when Jobe comes up, he's not guaranteed a rotation spot. Like, I think he's gonna do a lot of bullpen work. They're just gonna kind of baby his innings more than the Rockers, the Bubba Chandlers, the Chase Dolanders. Jobe seems like he's just gonna get babied more out of all those stud pitchers. Like, next year is the year to get Jackson Jobe, not this year for fantasy purposes. So I'm just out with all these other pitchers we liked in this range. I'm not willing to take a chance on him.
And I'm going kind of the starting pitcher right before Jackson Jobe is Bowden Francis. And two guys that couldn't be more opposite, like in terms of profiles and that sort of thing. But Bowden Francis is my starting pitcher fade at this point. I'm on board with the projection of a 4.45 ERA for Bowden Francis. I just think this guy ran so pure in the second half last year, just pitches to way too much contact. And I don't see him getting that fortunate again, especially when there are starting pitchers. I mean, I just named him that I'd rather have in this group. Even I didn't name Clark Schmidt. It's going right after Bowden Francis and Jackson Jobe. And I know we've got a listener question on Schmidt, so I won't go into too much detail yet, but I'd take Schmidt over Francis or Jobe at this point as well. So just better options both before and after where Bowden Francis is going.
Yep, no Bowden Francis for me either. If I want a boring, boring profile, there's a lot of picks later on you could take. Like, give me Tobias Myers later on if I want a profile like that. Going probably like 70 picks later. Like, I got just a name off the top of my head, just random dudes much later, yeah, if you want something like that.
Yeah.
All right, for me, my final fade is Gleyber Torres. Any man that wants to gamble on himself and goes to Detroit already gets a knockdown in my book, because that's a poor business decision. For most, prove me wrong.
Shouldn't they say you need to bet on yourself? Isn't that like a motivational quote?
Yeah, but he said he picked Detroit so he could bet on himself. And it's like, you picked the wrong ballpark to bet on yourself in.
Maybe bet on yourself in Coors or something.
Yeah, there's like Thyro Estrada's betting on himself very wisely on that one.
There we go. Yeah.
So that's part of this. So Gleyber Torres, ADP 240. Boring profile. His projection is very similar to Byron Buxton's. We're talking second base position here. If you're waiting on second base, like Jonathan India is going right after him, I take him in a heartbeat over Gleyber Torres. I just don't think the power is ever going to be what it once was, because that was a special happy fun ball-ish situation there for Gleyber Torres. Plus the ballpark shift now doesn't run as much as we'd hope for him to run. He's on the Tigers, which is going to be a better team. Not going to deny that. They haven't projected to lead off, but that's where Parker Meadows hopefully comes back to someday. So then where does Gleyber Torres go? Second, fifth? Where is he going? Originally, it was the middle of the lineup. I'm just out on him. I'm just going to keep it simple. He's a floor play. He's not a ceiling play. There's not a lot of upside, I think, in a Gleyber Torres, where I'd rather take a chance on Caleb Durbin later. Give me a chance on Gleyber Torres or Thyro Estrada later. There's a lot of second basemans later on I'd rather gamble on than take a boring Gleyber Torres.
I mean, I'll push back a little bit. We've agreed with each other a little bit too much tonight, but I mean the ceiling with Gleyber Torres is basically what he did in 22 and 23, which is a really good player. 25 home runs, 10 stolen base guy with good batting average. Granted, that was in Yankee Stadium. I know you'd probably come back with that. And yes, the Detroit thing hurts, but I think the pause, and it Gleyber Torres isn't necessarily a target for me. I've got him on a few teams. I think the positive sign of the coin with Gleyber Torres is you are betting on someone who has a pretty good track record of success, and it's just his age 28 season. I think Gleyber Torres, I think he's too young to write off and just say he's not going to be good anymore. And I do think, like, yeah, the ceiling isn't like the highest in the world, but if he just goes back to who he was the previous 2 years, like, this is the type of profile I love to buy on, by buying these guys coming off a bad year with a good track record and they're not too old. Like, this is what I like to do. And then you tack on at second base, like I would take Torres over Jonathan India. Probably not Horner, but like Zach Geloff's going above Gleyber Torres. I would take Gleyber Torres over him. I don't know about Jackson Holliday. I have no idea what to do with him, but I'm just trying to present the positives of Gleyber Torres. I don't think he's done yet.
Yeah, there's at least 5 second basemen after him that I would take. I know that much for sure. Oh, so,
let's beer bet this one, man.
Well, we'll have to put that one in the shop for a minute and figure out a proper bet on that one, not just throw that one from the hip right now. But
Why not, man? Live a little. You're going to Vegas, you gotta learn to live from the hip.
I'm saving it for Saturday night, amigo. That's gonna be a lot of living. A lot of living in that one.
Yeah, hopefully no dying.
Yeah, no, we'll make it back in a couple pieces. all right, listener questions. Before we get to that, let's wrap things up on the Bloom board here on this section. Ryan, what's your takeaways now that we've gone through them all again?
Nope. Yeah, similar type deal as to when we started. This is where I'm going. It's outside of a couple of the targets that I mentioned. Your Mullins, your Matt Shaw, who may not even again be in this group, McCarthy type deals. Just love the pitching. And so I'm going to prioritize hitting probably leading up to this part of the pocket, because I can see myself taking 3 out of my 4 picks here, 2 out of my 3, whatever, you know, however it falls in the draft on the pitcher side.
Yeah. For the most part, I want pitchers here, but there are like little pieces. Like, we didn't talk Elliot Ramos, who I like. Like, we talked to Mikel Garcia, Mullen, Shaw. There's guys here, Kiber Ruiz, if you missed on catcher. There's pieces in this range that you can get hitting wise, but I think that the main focus when I do most of my drafts is to attack pitching here. And that's where it goes back to when I start my draft, it's more of a hitter heavy. There's that middle glob of pitching to go get a few pieces of, get more hitters, then come back to pitching here. It's kind of a back and forth so far. All right. Got some questions in the chat here before we get to the old Discord. TDK says, interested if you like a guy slightly out of this range in Jeffrey Springs.
I have not really taken Springs that much. So no, I'm not really that interested. I worry about a lot with Jeffrey Springs, mostly the health. I just don't. I mean, it's not like this is a guy who has been able to throw. And I mean, he's got 135 innings in 2022, but outside of that, the last 5 years hasn't thrown more than 65 innings. And Jeffrey Springs is not young. This is age 32 season for Jeffrey Springs. So I just think the combination of injury history and age, I'm speculating elsewhere. No, there is a ceiling with Springs. It's just, I think the risk is pretty rough.
Yeah, I like Springs. I don't like dislike him right now, but there's other pitchers I like more. Mainly for the reasons Ryan mentioned. That ballpark terrifies me more than most people, apparently. The injury concerns are always in the back of my mind with Springs with his age, like you mentioned. Could he bust it out and pull like a Severino last year and have a great season? Of course. Like, he's got the skill set to do it, but I'll just probably do it elsewhere. Adam in the chat here says, did you adjust Clark Schmidt's projections post Gill and Cole? Maybe he goes a full 5 or 6 innings versus 4 1/3. What would that be, good or bad?
That'd be good. I like Clark Schmidt. I don't know if their projections really changed too much for Clark Schmidt. I mean, I think he was going to be in the rotation anyway, but now he's an integral piece of the Yankees rotation. So yeah, I mean, I kind of just said I would take Clark Schmidt over Jober, Bowden Francis at 239, probably over Rasmussen and Brandon Woodruff at 239, 240. So yeah, within that that subgroup of starting pitchers, I think Clark Schmidt is a fine pick where he's going. Yep,
agreed. He was supposed to be the fifth starter. Now he's the third starter in that rotation. So I'm not worried about his innings. They need his innings. And I like me some Clark Schmidt as well. Good old Rog Bloomfield says, Hauk had a great first half last year and bad second half. Injury, fatigue, or hitters caught up to him? I think it's just fatigue personally. But what do you think, Ryan?
Common theme from Rog tonight, just throwing out Red Sox that aren't within the ADP pocket we're talking about. But we'll cut him some slack. Tanner Hauk, I'm not in. I totally get why you would like Tanner Hauk. I think you could make the argument that Tanner Hauk, that first half version of Tanner Hauk, as he builds up and is now in his second year starting, like you may expect Tanner Hauk to that first half version to last longer into the season. I do love the ground ball rate. I'm just very scared of how Tanner Hauk limped to the finish last year. And again, that could just be a first year starting pitcher type workload type thing, but it's I don't like taking pitchers who limp to the finish the year before. It's just one of my things, and Tanner Hauk falls into that category.
Yeah, I think it's fatigue for me. Like, he limped to the finish, but he got to the finish. A lot of pitchers can't say that. So
again, Vegas goal.
Yes. This maybe how I should get a Tanner Hauk jersey for Sunday as I walk to the airport.
Like one arm left.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I guess the biggest thing for me in this range is there's a bunch of other guys I'd take over Tanner Hauk. But I do agree with one of your points there that maybe the first half version we saw, as he gets more accustomed to working the innings, that's who he is. And if he is that guy, he's better than most of these guys in this range. So if you believe in that Tanner Hauk, then go for it. But I'm going to take my chances on some of these other guys busting through on it instead of him.
He is in this range. I must apologize. 227 ADP. I missed him. Yep, that's my bad.
Rog is on it.
He's on it.
All right. Joe says, how does Dustin May fit in this section? He doesn't fit in here yet, but his ADP will come up. I was just looking at him a second ago.
Yeah, because Dustin May, as of airing time, is, I believe, the Dodgers' fifth starter, right? With Tony Gonsolin on the IL with a back injury. Dustin May is,
he'll be on the next show. His ADP is 320. He'll be on Friday's show unless he climbs up quickly. But I expect
238 in tonight's main event, by the way.
Oh, there you
238.
Go.
So
he'd be on next. Yeah, he would be in this pocket soon.
Yep. I don't know what to feel about Dustin May. Like, I think I'd still rather take, assuming Dustin May is somewhere in this pocket, I'm comparing to pitchers we just talked about. Like, I would take Lizardo, Lodolo, Schmidt.
I would take Tanner Hauk over Dustin May.
Maybe Hauk. Like, I mean, we do remember Dustin May is the guy who, like, we see all these great pitching gifts. I know we're kind of dating ourselves at this point. Jeez. But one who was like never really actually that good.
Yep.
So you're banking on him suddenly becoming good and healthy. I don't like banking on two things. I can bank on one at this point, but I don't like banking on two things. Whereas, like, if Jesus Lizardo is healthy, if Nick Lodolo is healthy, like, I think they're good and better than Dustin May. So
exactly. Like, May being a starter, May's always had that massive hype train behind him, but he gets guys to swing at balls way out of the zone because he has wicked movement. But a disciplined hitter, he starts walking everybody and gets hit because then he gives in his fastball is not that special. Like, so unless he figures something out, kudos, but let people move him into this ADP and leave other guys for us. I'll take that much.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's all of those questions. All right, let's head to the Discord where I get to navigate the minefield. listener questions. All righty. West Towny says, are you buying into the Woodruff projections? If so, it seems like he's underrated or underdrafted. Otherwise, it seems very optimistic to someone with his injury and hasn't pitched in 2 years.
Right. And so the context of that question, the projections being referenced with Brandon Woodruff, what we have on the screen here is a 3.69 ERA, 1.13 whip, and 153 strikeouts in 135 innings, if I'm merging steamer in the bat. Like, that is, I think, optimistic as hell. personally. I didn't think I knew this, but I posted this in the Discord today that I was reading an update on Brandon Woodruff. It doesn't sound like he is pitching in the majors for at least a month. The beat report, it was an MLB beat reporter saying, like, yeah, Brandon Woodruff pitched today, and in his next start, he might throw another inning. And then he needs a series of spring training starts, and then he needs a 30-day minor league rehab assignment. Like, I think Brandon Woodruff is, given all that, he's off my board. You're stashing an older, injured starting pitcher who, at minimum, I think you don't have for a month. It's like, that's tough for me to do.
Yeah, I mentioned your little blurb there for Breakfast with Bubba, and it doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. I'll say that much. I get, at first, in early spring, it's like, okay, he'll miss a start or two. I'm like, okay,
right.
Work with that.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking a best case scenario, it's late April, at best case scenario, it sounds like. And now we're playing with a lot of fire there in that situation. So I'm with you. Like, I think he could still be good. It's just, when does he show up to be good is the question for me. All right. GP Churchill has a doozy that Ryan's going to, you know, if this was like, you know, custody court, Ryan wouldn't even be allowed to make a comment on this, because these are two guys he really likes. That's like picking between your kids, Ryan. Clay Holmes or Nick Lodolo, which pitcher leads in innings pitched by year's end? That is a great question.
I would go Clay Holmes.
Oh, you did the right answer. Look at you. I'm shocked.
You think that's the right answer?
I do. I think
Thanks, Clay Holmes teacher.
I think Clay Holmes is like at least 150 innings this year, at least.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Clay Holmes' workload, honestly, which sounds weird to say for a converted reliever, but I and Lodolo, well, I talked about Lodolo. I like both of them. I would take Holmes over Lodolo. And the problem is, like, I'm not going to have to make that decision on draft day. Clay Holmes is going probably 50 picks before Nick Lodolo at this point, given how good he looks this spring.
All right, but that was a good one. Like that one a lot. Yeah. Aaron Gifts says, oopsie, has Jung-Hoo Lee projected for 13 stolen bases. Zip says 2. How many do you think he gets?
I'll defer to you on that one. Giants guy.
Lee is a conundrum, obviously. We've talked about him a few times on this show. I think there's a dude that could, like, rattle off. I think oopsie's pretty close, honestly. I think he's getting you at least 10. Steamer's got him for 10. If he plays a full season, I think if he ran into 15, I wouldn't be surprised. If they let him run like Matt Chapman ran, Matt Chapman's already got a steal this spring, folks, so watch out. Matt Chapman's crushing it this spring, by the way. Jung-Hoo Lee is going to get you double digits. At least 10, peaking close to 15, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're
so you're on team. Run. You're on team oopsie.
Yep, and if not, I just go oops. Got it wrong. Yep, you're welcome. You're welcome. All right. Our buddy Andy Splinter says, in preparation for the Vegas trip, ADP 225 to 250 feels like a game of speedy outfield roulette. Who are you putting your chips on? Lee, McCarthy, Mitchell, Castro, or Friedel?
McCarthy. Before I answer, that's a really good call out by Andy, and just a sign that, like, yes, you can still get, I think, decent speed, not just speed, but like guys that contribute in other categories this late in the draft. I think that's valuable intel to have. To answer Andy's question, I would go Jake McCarthy over the rest of that group, over Lee, Mitchell, Castro, Friedel from a stolen base standpoint. Like, I think McCarthy could pretty easily steal 30 plus bags this year.
Yep. And I got Mitchell second. BP says, our buddy here says, always thinking Friedel is sitting on a huge year. If he could just stay healthy, if he plays 145 games, could he be the best hitter in this pocket?
Yes. I mean, look back to 2023.
I know he's a beast. I get it.
And so it's not just the skills that TJ Friedel in 2023 posted. It was 18 homers, 27 bags, 279 batting average. It was 556 plate appearances. TJ Friedel can make it through a season. It's not like your boy Mitchell, who hasn't even sniffed a full season. So
I was going
to
mention.
I do think TJ Friedel could. I don't expect him to go back to 2023, but that line exists, and he did it against lefties and righties in a great park. Could lead off. TJ Friedel's, I think, a really good pick.
I could say the same thing. If you give me 145 games, give me Cedric Mullins over TJ Friedel.
Yeah, I won't fight you on that. I'd agree.
That's
where
I was saying, I think there's at least one guy in this range I would give me a full workload. I think we could surpass.
That's good. I guess the question was framed as like, is he the best hitter in this pocket?
I'm joking.
I obviously don't read the questions very well, given that I didn't even know the categories of the.
It's all good.
Of our buddy BP's question, my apologies. Now I'm just issuing apologies to everybody at this point.
Not to me, to everybody else. Just remember that.
Oh no, never.
Yeah. The last question we have here on the Discord, we got one more in the chat to get to. Ross Hawk says, do you think Brandon Lau gets platooned, and do you think projections are fully factoring in the shift in ballpark to a warmer version of Yankee Stadium?
Those are both good questions. I do think Brandon Lau gets platooned. I also don't think Brandon Lau stays healthy for a full season, and thus the projections all have Brandon Lau around 500 plate appearances, which he hasn't done since 2021. So I don't like that. In terms of like, are they factoring in the park? Derek Carty is.
Derek Carty's supposed to be, yes.
But it's interesting. Derek Carty has one of the lowest home run totals for Brandon Lau. Despite that, he's only projecting Brandon Lau for 21 home runs and 482 plate appearances, whereas Steamer is projecting him for 27 home runs, but in 553 plate appearances. So I know that Derek is factoring it in, and Derek has Brandon Lau, and I trust Derek and his projections, 21 homers and 482 plate appearances. So that's not that great, to be honest.
The one thing I'll say is I don't think he gets platooned right now because they don't really have a lot of options in that regard unless they really start throwing curveballs out there. They could. Have some – give Curtis Meade playing well. So he could do a Curtis Meade platoon there. The biggest thing is the injury. That's what's going to cost him because he's always hurt at the back, whatever. He's already had a back injury this spring. So that's why I've always played off
of Brandon Lau.
Very, very minor, but of course he's had it. Brandon Lau is always that kind of guy in like kind of the Byron Buxton realm. If you give me 130 plus games of Lau, I'm going to take that all year long. But you've also mentioned, Ryan, he doesn't play that game. Like he's done over 109 games one time and he gets 39 bombs. Like that's a legit dude. He just doesn't do it. But he has played over 100 back-to-back years with 21 homers. So in the right context, if you can platoon him yourself, you're doing okay. It's just I don't want to play that game. So, yeah.
That's hit lefties pretty well last year. Better than I thought. 72 plate appearances.
Yeah, that's why they won't platoon him very much.
Okay. Yeah. You ride him while he's healthy to start the season. And then dump him when he gets hurt.
But. It's also something to keep in mind when he gets dumped and he's hurt and he's getting ready to come back, you can pick him up for cheap because he will play until he gets hurt again. So something to think about. Kind of a better Jorge Polanco. All right, last question from the chat here. Kevin Hastings says, he's not in this pocket, but I'll break rules since Roger didn't. If Joe Boyle makes a rotation, he could jump to this range, 308 and then OC recently. Thoughts if he jumps this group? I am all about Joe Boyle. So.
Oh, no, I don't. I disagree. The guy can't throw a strike, so I like to.
This spring, the Rays are already doing magic with him, buddy.
Yeah, magic Rays. Yeah, someone else can wish cast on magic. I'll take Clark Schmidt.
Okay, would you take him or Bowden Francis?
I guess I'd take Joe Boyle over Bowden Francis, but that's not really a ringing endorsement.
You said you could take it.
I mean, I'd probably take my dog over Bowden Francis, so whatever.
Ooh. Wow. I know his parents aren't listening. Wow, that's rough. That's a rough world we're living in right there. But all right, my friend, that'll wrap it up. Good listener questions. Good conversation. A lot of upside talk here, which I don't know if everybody's all about, but that's what this region states to me. So we'll be off tomorrow, Wednesday, back with you guys Thursday night, and recording Friday for your fifth and final pocket of ADP. Any other final thoughts, Ryan?
No, I hope you all aren't sick of us yet, because we're pumping out about 6 hours of shows this week. But again, it's that sprint for draft day, and might as well do it. So I'm enjoying our little chats as we go through the player pool.
And if you are annoyed by us, too bad. All right. So make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanVHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on the Patreon at patreon.com/Bubba Bloom. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 222. Catch you all next time.